You're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, your sidekick in the quest for knowledge, power, and entertainment. So strap yourselves in and prepare for victory!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And joining us today, the founder of Churchill Productions and producer of such films like Day of the Living Dead, Checkpoint, which I am dying to see, and the Amityville Harvest, which I believe just of last week made the top 10 in the rentals on Redbox, so big congrats to him. Thomas J. Churchill, or Church, as we're going to refer to. Thank you so much for being here today, man.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
I'm excited to talk with you. Your career looks very interesting here, especially I'm very curious to hear more details about how you got into making movies. But before we do that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at Canned Air Pod and on Instagram at @canned_air. And if you like what we're doing, want to show your support, head over to our website, cannedairpodcast.com, and there's a link to our Patreon page. And there's also a link to our merch page. Both ways you can support us and get something back and in return. Randy, what else am I forgetting?
So if you're sitting around not doing much on a Tuesday night around 9 p.m. Eastern, hop on Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube and check out Jack and I play some Jackbox games. Join us, win some prizes, have some fun.
All right. And with that behind us, let's just get our attention turned right over to Church here. Man, I want to thank you again so much for being here with us tonight. I am always in awe of people who have a job like you do, someone who can, you know, take a story and just, I don't know, make the magic happen to bring it to life. And looking at your IMDb, it looks like this is a passion or a dream of yours you've had since you were very, very young. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes. It's been a great ride. This was something I've been wanting to do since I was about 7 years old, probably even earlier than that. But my I do remember at seven, I really wanted to get into that movie screen. Two of the films that kind of made me want to get into those screens was a film called King Kong and a little independent film called Star Wars.
All that little thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I started off in the business of being an actor. I wanted to be in, I love doing make-believe things and playing make-believe with my friends and family. And I always wanted to be an actor. But it wasn't until about 10 years later, when I was 17, I decided to build, I guess that's originally where it started. I got convinced my dad to get me a video camera, and I made my first movie. But I only made the movie to showcase my talents as an actor. So I wrote this project, produced this project, and directed it. But it was then when I fell in love with the entire process, and I knew that I wanted to do more than just act. I wanted to tell the stories. I figured, you know, when you're doing something visual like that, that is the closest thing for someone to get inside your mind as a writer. Sure. And I loved watching everything come into fruition, and it was just been a passion to follow that along the way, and you know, takes me to where we are today. I'm still doing it, and I feel blessed and I'm grateful.
Yeah, what an amazing job and amazing dream as well. Now I need to backtrack a little bit here. You mentioned the video camera that you got in high school. I believe it was high school, correct?
Yep.
And this film you spoke about on IMDb, it looks like it was called War Master. Can you go into any details on this film you made?
Sure. I convinced my dad to get me this video camera. I was just doing this. I was part of the thing called the New York Showcase Company, which was, you know, for acting, you know, and I wrote a few skits and performed it and did a different version of A Christmas Carol. We got a standing ovation. And then I wrote this little skit called The Teenage Cops, The War Master. And it got really, like, everybody gave me this standing ovation after I wrote and performed in it. And then I said to one of the kids that we were that I was friends with at the time, I wonder if we can make this into a movie. And he's like, we're kids. You know, what kind of movie would you make? And I said, I don't know. Let's try. So we tried to do the whole 8mm thing and realized it was really expensive and, you know, to go out and get the film. And then, you know, you don't really get that great look and everything always kind of looks like it's strobe, old 8mm film. Right. And then, you know, I remember we were in Sears at the time, and Sears was this they had these this whole video camera, this whole video world. Now, this is before where everybody can go out and, you know, everybody can be a filmmaker and all the technology is at people's fingertips now. Nobody it wasn't like that back then. Right. So they had the full-size VHS RCA with glorious color. And, and when I saw it, I wanted to have it. It was kind of like, you know, it's just something I had to have. So at the time, it was really expensive. My father decided he'd get it for me, but with the understanding that I would get a part-time job and pay him back and learn responsibility, which I did. So I got my friends together. I took that script that was in this New York showcase, and I extended it and created it. It was basically, when we did this, about 2 years later, there was a show that came out called 21 Jump Street.
Oh, yeah.
But we had the first concept of doing this as a teenage cops and what we wrote about it. And you know, and it was fun, you know. We did things, just craziness. I mean, we got, you know, cops came up to us at times and what are you kids running around with these guns and toy guns? And but they all, back then, it was still somewhat innocent. So
right.
The cops would come over, yell at us, look at the guns and show that it's, you know, they're toys. And then I convinced one of the cops, hey, you want to be in my film? Well, what do we have to do? Well, all you got to do is just drive up and tell me, you know, how did it go type thing. And he's like, okay, let's do it. So it was fun. And I didn't understand the whole, once the movie was done, after we shot it, how do you put it together? So that was the big thing. You know, I mean, I ended up getting these crazy wires and a stereo and two VCRs and, you know, syncing it that way, because to edit, I went from tape to tape. And it's difficult. I mean, now with the computers, I mean, you just go back, you click, you know, cut, paste back right. then. With, I don't know if you guys, you know, remember VCRs or anything like
that.
Oh,
yeah.
But anytime you hit pause, the tape would go back a hair, you know, a frame or two.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of, you know, really get things accurate. And then you always had that if you cut it wrong, you got this crazy red line that would go across the screen. And then you had to figure out, all right, how do I get rid of that line? You know, so it was all trial and error and putting, you know, a score and songs behind the dialogue, because, you know, we're shooting with the camera and the camera mic. So how do you put music back there? So everything we did, it was all, you know, trial and error. And once the movie was done, people came up to me and asked me to put it in a film festival. At that time, I had no idea what a film festival was. Never heard of it. Didn't know, you know, sure. I came from Glendale, New York. Nobody knew about film festivals. And there was about 7 or 8 people that came up to me because they saw this newspaper clipping about this film festival. So I submitted it. And when I went, I gave my tape to the guy and I said to the guy, you know, how many people are in this festival? Because I don't know what that is. He's like, including you, about 1,000 entries. I said, wow. Oh, okay, cool. Fast forward a few months later, I got a letter stating I should be present at this award ceremony. So, you know, they did the this little award ceremony. And at the end of the night, I won. You know, they gave me a check. I was in the paper. They gave me a plaque. And it was the first time I've won something like that. and, you know, putting a project together without any help and trying to figure things out. And at the end, you win a film festival. And I thought that was it. That's the greatest thing. And then I convinced video stores around my neighborhood to carry it after they read the newspaper clippings that came out about the film from the film festival. So I remember one video store gentleman said to me, "Well, why would I want to carry this?" And I said, "Why not? You know, you put it with your other movies." I didn't know how things worked. I was 17 years old. And he says, "Let me ask you something. If you came into a video store and you saw a movie like this, would you rent it?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Why?" And I said, "I would be curious." He said, "I'll take 5 copies."
Wow.
That's so cool.
And wait, the greatest thing was every copy, I had to go back to the original and edit and cut and edit and cut the same way again. Because if you made a duplicate copy from a VHS, you're going to lose a generation. Oh, so you got to go back to the master and do. So every copy, people don't realize whoever still has those tapes, those are actually original tapes because every copy was an original.
And how many would you say you made?
I must have sold about maybe 25, 30 copies to 4 different video stores.
Now that, for the people who didn't grow up in the age of VCRs, like, that is quite a feat. Like, my God, I can't even imagine. You know, the over the shoulder full size VHS camera you talk about. I remember my dad bringing one home in 88, I think it was. And that was strictly forbidden. We were not allowed to put our fingers on that thing. But as we got older, I would use it for little film projects around the house. I mean, I never followed through like you did, Church. But I remember one I did was like a claymation thing. I just had a big bunch of clay there, made a couple characters, wanted to make them fight. And the hardest part was because, you know, when you hit record on that, it doesn't just immediately start recording. You have to give it, you know, 2 or 3 seconds. So I would hit record and start counting out loud, go watch the tape, see where I would come in, and then, you know, hit the button, count that loud, and then turn it off right again. Just so I get a split second. And it was labor intensive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My hat goes off to you. I can't imagine 25 original edits. Jesus.
And the funny part is, I had to create a box. So I had these white clamshell blank boxes that I bought. I had to get typed all the labels up with a marker. I created like the spine of the VHS box. And then I went out and got a bunch of photos, and I stuck each one has an original photo in it from like a mock poster. But nothing was ever – like now, everything's Photoshop. I can create that and just slide it in a VHS sleeve and boom, you're done.
Right,
but each one was put together, you know, for that particular tape. And, you know, I mean, it's been it was fun. It was crazy. The cool thing about the VHS camera, the one that I had, it was the next one up because the first VHS cameras that came out, it was on your shoulder. Half of it was on your shoulder, and then the other half was in a pouch that looked like a little carrying VCR that you would carry, and that would hang from your shoulder. Mm-hmm. So my camera that I bought, it was all the first time it was all packed together, where you hit the button, the side of it opened, and you put your full size VHS tape in there, and then, you know, you close it and it was RCA, glorious color. That's all I kept remembering, the damn commercials that I had saw. And that was it, you know, and it came with a little credit block inside. You can kind of, no, I'm sorry. Mine didn't come with the credits. I had to go to a friend's house who had something similar, and he had to type in my credits on his camera.
Yeah, because some of those cameras, I forgot, they had like digital like text overlays and stuff you could do, right?
Yeah. They all look like all the fonts look like the movie War Games.
Oh my God. Man. A different age, wasn't it?
If I could go back now with me now, go back to that 17-year-old kid and kinda tell him what's going to happen, I would love to see the look on his face. Yeah. While he's trying to figure everything out and direct for the first time people, you know, it's like, okay, you go over here and you come over there. I'm like, hey, you know, in a few years, you're going to direct some Oscar nominee people. You know, yeah, okay, get out of here, old man.
Yeah, well, yeah, how could you ever, I mean, how could you ever believe that? That's what makes the job so freaking awesome. That's what makes it.
I'll be like Grandpa Biff going back to young Biff and Back to the Future.
Oh, my God. Perfect metaphor.
Yeah, exactly.
Then where do you go exactly from, you know, making movies in high school, I guess, after graduation? How do you get into the, you know, Hollywood business, I guess?
There was a long road. I had a lot of stupid, I made some dumb choices in my life to stick around and be in various relationships and just prolonged my stay before I came out to L.A. So I made that movie at 17. The following year, they had another film festival, same company. I submitted that again. I'm in another movie, and I won again, but I won, I think, second prize. Then there was another one right after that. So I was making a movie a year with, you know, back in the day when I was a kid. And I put all these, I call them the neighborhood films, I put them all out into these video stores. And at one point, I felt like I'm ready, but I wasn't really ready. So I made another three more movies in the neighborhood, and they were bigger, you know, bigger budgets and stuff like that, that I ended up putting my 401k plan in, you know, because now I'm not a kid anymore. Now I'm like, you know, I'm a young man, right, and had a real job. And, you know, I've done jobs. That's how I realized that what I wanted to do, I felt like it was for me, because I had jobs that people, I mean, I enjoyed all the experience that I had across the board, but I've done things that people will make a full career out of, you know, from carpentry to painting, to working for Boar's Head, to working in a pharmaceutical company for X amount of years, being an operations manager and operations director, and just, you know, living the 9-to-5, had about 150 people reporting to me. And then I made movies still on the side on the weekends at night or holidays on my vacation. Whatever I could, I was always doing it. And then I realized I was in this relationship that was just completely toxic. And but I spent 11 years in it and not realizing that it was just toxic every year. And there was an opportunity for me to see the light. So I decided to leave it and take an opportunity and follow the opportunity that was presented to me. So back in 2009, I'm going to jump a little bit here. Back in 2009, I was living in North Carolina, in Wilmington. I was doing some things down there. And I had an opportunity to come out to Los Angeles to direct a spec pilot for somebody that I never met, but I spoke to a few times over the internet. So when I was out here and I directed something for this group, the last day of shooting, the executive producer asked me what's next for me. And I said, well, I got this little movie I'd like to get off the ground. And he asked me what the budget would be. And, you know, I told him. And next thing I know, his hand came over the table to say, let's do it. And that movie was a movie called The Merging Past that I ended up doing with the gentleman's name was Paul Weinroth, and ended up becoming one of my dearest friends and family. And I shot the movie in New York. I went back to New York, shot it in New York, and then midway through filming, Paul said, why don't you take the movie out to L.A. and shoot it in L.A., cut it in L.A., you know, and, you know, we'll see what happens. You want to move out there, and there was nothing holding me back in New York. I grabbed my dog and grabbed the opportunity. I came out, and I've been out here since 2009.
Now, is this about the time or shortly after you started up Churchill Productions?
No. Churchill Productions, I started up back in 97.
Oh, wow. It so was that's after just been like the ongoing production name for everything you've done.
Yeah, it's a play on my name. You know, I mean, it's only, you know, my name is spelt like Winston Churchill, but my company is the three words. It's Churchill Productions, because it comes from when I was a kid, and me and my brother, one of my brothers, we went to school together. He was 5 years older than me, but he's still 5 years older than me. that never changes. And he was always called Big Church on the Hill. His friends would call him, "Hey, Big Church on the Hill, Little Church on the Hill," and then that always stuck with me, being the Little Church on the Hill. And I wanted to do, my first logo was this church I created on a hill with the sun going up. And then I said, you know, I wanted to do something different. So it was always a church on some sort of hill for my company. And the logos progressed over the years. They changed a little bit. And we have a great logo now that I'm very happy with. Just, you know, as you evolve, the logo should evolve as well. Sure.
Now, there's a few movies here that we need to talk about from your IMDb page that you have a production credit on. First of which being Amityville Harvest, which we just mentioned at the top of the episode. And to my knowledge, was in the top 10 rentals last week at around Halloween. So again, congrats to you on that.
Thank you. That's one of our latest films. You know, it's a film I've wrote, produced, and directed. You know, I had an opportunity to do a film like this for a company called Hollywood Media Bridge and meet some great people. I had some great producers on it, Phil Goldfein and Ben Dang and Alex Zurich Hunt and, you know, Felissa Rose. And we created something really good. And after it was done, Lionsgate picked it up. Oh, and nice. I was very, very, it's my first studio film. So it's like 360, you know, kid from New York with a dream to come out and make movies. And then next thing you know, you got a Lionsgate logo in front of your film. It's just, I can't explain the feeling. I'm so humbled and grateful of what I got.
It's got to be surreal. I mean,
oh, sure
you
is.
Don't work a day in your life if you're doing what you love, and that's what you've made happen. So that's amazing, man. And this other film, as soon as I got on your IMDb page, there's a trailer for Checkpoint, and I watched it and was immediately intrigued. It looks right up my alley, action thriller with quite a bit of star power in there as well. Tyler Mane, Stephen Jeffries, William Forsythe, Kane Hodder, Bill Goldberg, Fred Williamson, the list goes on and on. Can you tell us a little more about this film?
We've done that a few years ago. I was doing some horror films, and there was another company approached me and said to me, you know, it'd be great if you can do an action film. And I said, oh, I can do an action film. So I put a bid in, and I didn't get that gig. And that kind of bothered me, because when I told the guy that I can do the action film, he says, you're a horror guy. What do you know about action? And that really bothered me, because the very first movie I ever made as a kid was The War Master, and that was an action film. Right. So I know I could do action. And so my father passed away in 2015, and I wanted to do something in his honor, being a military vet. And also I wrote and was able to get the finances together with this company. And I produced and directed this film. And it was a little surreal. You're directing icons, right, and people that you know, grew up watching. But the very first person that I hired on that movie was Fred Williamson. Now, going back a quick little story, I probably share the story all the time, and it's very inspirational and very dear to my heart. When I was a kid, I was about 7 or 8 years old. My father used to take me to, my father introduced me to the world of cinema. Even though he wasn't in the business at all, he was actually a pretty good artist. He can draw. He was a great, great artist. And he would take me out to the movies and or to the park and all while my mom was like either getting dinner ready or cleaning, or if I came home from the school then I did had a great day, because I was kind of a troublemaker at school. Class comedian, I call it, not the clown. People get scared of clowns. Nobody was ever afraid of me. So I remember my father used to take me to horror films and action films, and he used to cover my eyes on all the violent or the nude scenes and all. But your ears, are listening to what's going on the screen, and it would just 10 times more. It would make your brain explode, because you're hearing stuff that is just magnifying everything that was really on the screen. So that used to scare me as a kid, for horror, because I was like, oh my god, I'm scared, but I don't know what's going on because his hand's in my eyes, but I'm hearing it. So we used to go to the movies and go to Central Park Zoo. So we're in the zoo, and he points this guy out, and he says, "See that, Tom? That's a movie star." And I never seen a movie star up front. It was always on TV. So I can't say magazine or reading, because I wasn't really into that, but it was always the TV. So it was Fred Williamson. He was walking. He was wearing this coat that said "The Last Fight." And I remember that vividly. And I ran over to him. I let go of my dad's hand, and I ran over to him. Fred was by the seals at the Central Park Zoo. I tugged on his elbow, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Williamson, my name is Thomas Churchill. I want to be an actor just like you." And I remember him saying, "Hey, little man, where did you come from?" And my father came over. They started talking. As a kid, you get bored. You look at the seals now, because, hey, I already said what I had to say to the guy. So fast forward, I get the – I'm privileged to do some conventions and, do a lot of signings for people, which are still surreal for me. And Fred was at a few of these conventions, but I never went over to him because that's my childhood. And one convention we were at, it was in Pennsylvania, and we were both by ourselves in the green room. I walked in, and he was sitting there. I was like, shoosh. I didn't want to talk to him because, it's your childhood. So right. He turned around, and he said, "What's up, dog? Hammer," and he extended his hand. And I said, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "We actually met one time ago." He goes, "We did? What show?" And I said, "No, it was like 30 years ago." And he's like, "30 years ago?" So I brought him back to the Central Park Zoo. And he's staring at me, and I saw it in his eye. And he goes, "I remember that kid. I remember that kid, you with your dad." And when he said that, I realized he remembered. Truly remembered.
That's cool.
So again, fast forward, my father passes away, and my father's name was Charles. And I was writing a character named Chester, which is another name for Charles. And the only person I ever wanted to play Chester was Fred Williams. And Fred did the honor for me, and he was in the film playing Chester. And that was kind of like a full 360. My dad introduced me to Fred. And Fred got to be in one of my first big budget movies, where my father passed. He never saw it. I'm sure he saw it now. I mean, looking down at me, but it was surreal doing that. Directing Fred, who 30 something years ago, he was talking to a little kid in the zoo.
Yeah,
so amazing.
Yeah, and I bet it has to be just as surreal for him as it is for you. What an incredible story! I love that story. It makes me want to watch this movie even more now. Can't freaking wait. So what's next for you, man? What's in production now? What should we be looking out for?
Besides Checkpoint, I have a lot of films out there. We got a film called Nation's Fire that has Bruce Dern in it, and Gil Bellows, and Lou Ferrigno Jr., Chuck Liddell, and Chris DeGrady. There's a film on Netflix I wrote called The Hard Way with Randy Couture and Michael J. White. That's streaming. I got a movie coming out called Big Freaking Rat.
I saw the cover for that one. That looks intriguing.
Yeah, it's a fun creature feature film. It's actually doing very well overseas, and it's supposed to be coming out very, very shortly, I think in the next few months out here. I have a Christmas movie coming out December on one of the networks called The Business of Christmas, which I produced and directed. We've got a couple other horror films streaming coming out besides The Amityville Harvest. There's another movie called The Stepdaddy that's coming out. So we got about four films in the pipe, like ready to come out for distributors. And, you know, next year is going to be very busy with a bunch of other things we're putting together. And I'm just very, very blessed and grateful that I get to do what I do.
That's so cool. And where should people be checking you out, man? I found you on Instagram at Churchill Productions and on Twitter at Thomas Churchill. Is there anywhere else we should be looking?
Yeah, on Instagram, I do have Churchill Productions, but I also have Thomas_J_Churchill. Same thing, Thomas Churchill on Twitter, Thomas J. Churchill on Facebook. There's a fan page and a bunch of movie pages. They can also reach out to our other companies that we have. Los Angeles Studios is one of the post production companies that we have out here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I mean, but somebody can Google me and find a way to talk to me or to reach out to me. And it's funny, I mean, I hate saying that, but my nephew's taught me that. He said, "Hey, Uncle Tom, did you know you're in Google?" I'm like, "I didn't know what that was at the time." I'm like, "What?" So he goes, "Yeah, I put your name in and everything comes up." I'm like, "What do you mean everything comes up? What are you talking about?" So then I looked and I said, "Oh, that's a good thing." So I tell, so if I don't have a business card with me and somebody's like, "Hey, how do I get a hold of you?" I say, "Google me."
Makes it, and that's so, just another thing that probably makes you feel really damn good, huh?
To Google me?
Man. I would think so, to just type your name in and see all your work pop up. I mean, got to be kind of flattering on some level, no?
Yeah, you know, it, I guess because it's kind of somewhat validation of what you do. I mean, I remember when I came out here 2009, and, you know, I've done a bunch of neighborhood movies, but this is the first movie I made that I felt like I wanted to show the world was The Emerging Past, which that's also streaming. And I left the pharmaceutical job that I've been doing for, you know, I was an operations manager. And I remember my brother who just argued with me and said, "You know, what the hell are you doing? You're walking away from everything. You got your 401k, you got this, you got that. Why would you do that? What's, you know, it's stability. Why would you do that?" And fast forward, you know, I'm not saying it was easy, but fast forward, my brother lets people know that his brother's movie was in the top 10 in Redbox and it's streaming on cable. It's, you know, hey, he just directed Goldberg, and, you know, he wrote something for Randy Couture. He's directing a 2-time Oscar nominee, Bruce Dern, you know, I mean, so it's kind of, that is, I always tell my family and all, because, you know, it is a hard business to be in and to maintain, but, you know, you be nice to the people going up, because you're going to meet the same people coming down. And the one thing that I wanted to be true to myself, that if I leave this world tomorrow, God forbid, I'm not ready yet, I want people to look at me and say, you know, he didn't take no for an answer. He had this dream and he followed it. And if you believe in yourself and you believe in what you can do and what you have, if you believe, you achieve, and then you receive it. And it's all about just staying focused and believing and understanding that little voice inside of you and staying focused on and true to who you are. Of course, life throws curveballs at you, but it's all about, you know, how many balls can you keep and keep going?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Great advice, too. Man, this has been so much fun having you here, Church. And again, I encourage people to, just Google Thomas J. Churchill, and boy, you'll get everything come up in a nice organized list for you there. And I strongly recommend checking out that IMDb list. Lots of interesting looking films on there. So once again, Church, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. It's been, it was a pleasure, and God bless you guys. And thank you. I hope to be on again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Randy, what have we on the website, sir?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, see previous episodes, check out our Hall of Heroes, get a link to our merchandise page, and send us a message if you want to be on the show.
There you have it. And once again, find us on Twitter at cannedairpod and on Instagram at canned_air. And that lovely little website Randy was talking about, once again, cannedairpodcast.com has links to get merch like t-shirts, mugs, and our Patreon page, where $5 a month gets you access to our Canned Air Patreon pod. Tons of ways for you to give us your money, people. We make it easy for you. So I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I'm Thomas J. Churchill.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and be excellent to each other.
This has been a Canned Air production.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.